getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Hi, welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker. Today we're talking about taking the emotions out of the divorce negotiations. But we're changing things around a little bit because for this conversation, it's me who's being interviewed.
Hello, everyone. This is Sahaj Dernan with DivorceWithEase.ca. Women go through many transitions in their life, and divorce is one of the toughest transitions that many families can go through in their lifetime. I know because my parents, they separated when I was 13, and it was a really, really rough transition. More recently, I had a breakup that left me feeling vulnerable, concerned about whether I was doing the right thing, and feeling isolated and alone to face what felt like many life challenges. Luckily, I had 25 years teaching yoga, meditation, stress reduction, and how living a natural lifestyle can bring more ease and relaxation to the everyday life. And those were some of the techniques that I used to manage that transition with a little bit more ease. And I was really grateful I had those things to rely on. But today I'm here to welcome Mandy Walker. Hi, Mandy.
Hi.
Mandy is from mandywalker.com if you want to find her website. She is a divorce coach and mediator, and she has a blog called Since My Divorce. Thank you for joining me today, Mandy.
Well, this is a pleasure. It's really good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. I think we're going to have a fun conversation today and hopefully one that'll be enlightening for people as they listen to it.
I hope so.
So today we're going to talk about taking the emotions out of the legal process. And while many people talk about approaching the legal process as a business transaction, it's not really the place to find answers to the hurt. So Mandy, I wanted to ask what you recommend for people who are newly approaching the divorce territory with regards to emotional processing and going through the legal process, because sometimes the two really feel like they never shall meet, and it can be even more challenging than to go through that legal process.
Right. So I do have a theory. I have a theory that getting divorced or ending a marriage or a committed relationship, mm-hmm. is really about three processes. Okay. There's the emotional process, there's the legal process, and then there's all the practicalities and the logistics of moving from we to me.
Right.
And what I've observed is people do not have the bandwidth to do all three of those at the same time.
Right.
The most you can hope to do is two of those processes at a time. So maybe it's the emotional and the logistics. Maybe it's the legal and the logistics. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, but you can't do all three.
Okay.
And what I've seen people, so I think that, you know, that's important to bear in mind. I've been involved in some divorce recovery classes, and I think, you know, for those to be effective, people have to be ready to go through that. And it's very difficult for them to go through that and be ready to do that while they're working through the legal process. So you could do, I've seen people go through divorce recovery before they start the legal process and afterwards. If they do it while they're going through the legal process, I think that it tends to be less effective because the legal process can churn up an awful lot of things.
Okay.
And then just from a plain, simple, practical standpoint, there's, and I know you're based in Canada and I'm based in the US, mm-hmm. There's no employers that I know of that will give employees time off to work through their divorce.
Right. So, yep. Same in Canada.
So you, and there's a lot of work involved. There's a lot of, it takes a lot of hours to figure all of this transition that has to happen out. So you're trying to do that on top of go to still working full time, mm-hmm. and parenting for many people. Yeah. That's where it becomes important to be realistic about how much can you really take on at the time, and then try and pace your way through this transition.
Right.
So I would guess the most common mistake I see people make mm-hmm. is that they think, they've made this decision, the decision has been made that the marriage is ending, and they think the next step is to file for divorce.
Okay. That seems quick to me.
It is. It's very quick. But because I think people think, again, a lot of it comes because this is their first time going through divorce, so they don't know how to do it.
Right.
And so they think, okay, we need to get divorced, so therefore we have to go into the legal process to get divorced. And then say, well, just slow down a bit. Slow down here, because mm-hmm. the legal process is the formality about it. Mm-hmm. Yes, you will have to do that, but maybe you don't need to do it right now. Maybe you can take some of the stress out of your life and ease the emotions by slowing it down and not diving into the legal process.
That sounds like good advice to me.
Yes, and I wish more. Because I think it's good advice. I'm giving it, but I really wish that more people would see that. And see, so like there are times when you absolutely, absolutely have to go ahead and file for divorce and do it urgently. Mm-hmm. And usually, I would say that's where there are concerns about domestic abuse, access to money, or assets being spent on non-marital things. Like if you have a spouse who you think is trying to hide assets, then you need to go ahead and file for divorce. So, you know, there are some situations where filing for divorce right away is absolutely the right thing to do, and you have to move that away. And then you're using the legal process to help protect yourself.
Okay.
And if you don't have those factors present in your situation, then holding off filing for divorce means it gives you time. And I think time is my first strategy.
Okay.
Helping to take the emotions out of the legal process and giving you, and what we want to do by taking the emotions out of the legal process is to give people the ability to make more rational decisions, mm-hmm. more thoughtful, intentional decisions that they're not going to regret later on. And they're not going to say, well, you know, if I'd had more time, I would have made a different decision.
Right. You know, that's one of the things that I talk about on my website too, because I teach meditation and yoga and stress relief techniques. And I find that those are tools that they help to give a little bit of space. And when we have that little bit of space between things, whether it's between the divorce and the legal process or the divorce and even the emotional process, because it is possible to create a distance between ourselves and our emotions. We think that they are all one, but, and in some respects they are, but just the fact that we can see our emotions, you know, we could see them playing out. Who is it that's seeing them play out? So we're not necessarily all one where we have to get swept away by the emotions. And I'm not saying that it's easy to do that. Really, it's an advanced technique, but there are simple tools that we can learn in the process, well, whether it's in the process of these, sometimes people come to those stress reduction techniques while they're going through a stressful process in their life, and they apply it daily because it's like it helps them get through in a much, much more manageable way than they might otherwise, or than they might do if they were coping in less healthy ways, like going to alcohol or overeating, or, you know, there's all kinds of ways we can find to manage these things. But that space between is a really important place and could be a really powerful place for someone to start. It's like how you do that divorce is almost the defining steps of how you will be in that next part of your life after the divorce.
Right.
Of course, there's still hope, even if the divorce doesn't go as you plan and, you know, nothing is working and you feel like you haven't been your best self, because it's pretty hard to be your best self when you're going through those stressful moments. But but I hear what, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me what you're saying to not dive straight into the legal process, because you're going to be much more clear-headed if you can find some tools to create a bit of space between you and the difficult emotions that you might be going through.
Right. And some of those difficult emotions are grieving. Mm-hmm. So, and in 80% of divorces, the decision to end the marriage is made unilaterally by one party. Yeah. I think I've spoken to a lot of people that would say it would be great if you could both sit down and say, you know, this isn't working. Yeah, you're right. It's not working. We need to get divorced. That doesn't happen in most cases. In most cases, it's like one party says, this isn't working. I can't do this any longer. And oh my God, why can't the other party see that? And so then when the decision is made to end it, it's made by one party. That doesn't mean that that party hasn't grieved the loss of the marriage. It just means that both parties go through a grieving process, but they're on different timelines. Mm-hmm. So by the person who's made the decision to end the marriage, they may well have been working through their grief for six, nine months.
Yes.
They're well advanced through that process. Right. So when they tell their spouse that they can't stay married any longer and their marriage needs to end, that spouse is just starting the grieving process then. Mm. And that puts them at a disadvantage.
Yes.
And that's why I say, if you can just, the one thing, if you can just create time, it means it's going to give you time. If you're the person who didn't make the decision, it's going to give you time to grieve. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And working through that grieving process will then help you be in a better position to make the decisions that are necessary in the legal world.
And I imagine too, whether you are the person that made the decision or the one on the other side, there's going to be feelings of either disbelief and hurt and rejection, and then on the other side, a lot of guilt potentially, and feeling, yeah, especially if there are kids involved.
Yes, yes. And so just, I think it's, you have a much better likelihood of being able to conduct the legal process, getting divorced and deciding how you're going to divide everything up with dignity and respect, if you can just slow it down a little bit.
Okay.
And I think what I think is even more important about that is, you know, if you have children together, you're going to be parenting together, mm-hmm, for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And that, so creating, laying the foundation so you can transition from being a spousal relationship to being into a parenting relationship, and one where it will work for the benefit of your children, that has enormous payback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for all involved.
For all involved, because it's not the divorce itself that damages the children or harms the children. No. It's the ongoing conflict. Mm-hmm. So if you can create an environment where you can end the divorce and still parent together afterwards successfully or civilly with the best interests of your children at heart, then you're doing the right thing.
That sounds like very sound advice. So what are some of the ways that you help people move? I'm assuming you work with people no matter which of the three, whether they're in the emotional stage or working through the emotions or the legal stuff or the practical side.
Right. So I would say a lot of my work is on, because I'm a divorce mediator as well. Mm-hmm. So I do help people work through the legal process as in a mediated divorce form.
Okay.
And then I help people work on the practicalities. And obviously I can't mediate for two people and coach one person there. So it's,
right,
I have to watch out for conflicts of interest there. Okay. But in terms of other things to help take the emotion out of the legal process, One of the things I've seen is be very cautious about misinformation and relying on misinformation to make judgments or decisions for you. Don't base your assumptions of how your divorce is going to go or your parenting arrangement is going to go from your friend's experience. I'll share another story in a moment, but I have people that says, oh, well, my divorce was terrible. It went on for 2 years. It cost me thousands and thousands of dollars. And I'll say, well, how long ago was that? They say, well, it was 20 years ago. Mm. There's a lot that's changed in the divorce arena since 20 years ago. So that person's, every divorce is unique.
Yes.
Because I can find similarities between each divorce, but there's no two divorces that are going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And each of those differences is what helps to craft what's going to happen in that divorce.
Okay.
It all goes into deciding what is a parenting plan going to look like, because you have to do it based on what is going to work for your family, and your family is different than everybody else's family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mediated quite recently for a couple. They came in, mm-hmm. and we are required to talk about spousal support, and that's often a very difficult subject. And he said, well, by the way, I have to tell you, I'm not paying spousal support.
Ooh.
And I said, well, and in Colorado, we have a guideline. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, I have to run the guideline, and then we can, when I've had your income information, and then we can see what that says, and then we can talk about it. He said, no, you don't understand me. I'm not paying spousal support. I said, oh, well, tell me more about that.
Yeah, so how do you manage those conversations?
He said, I don't care if I'm court ordered to pay spousal support. If I'm ordered to pay spousal support, then I will quit my job. I've talked to my mom already, and she has told me that I can go live with her.
Wow.
And I'm not paying it. And I said, well, and how that will play out ultimately, that you will be in contempt of court and may face being thrown in jail. He said, I don't care. I'm not paying it.
Wow.
I said, well, who would that hurt the most? He said, well, probably me.
Wow.
Now, the real kicker here, though, is when we did get the financial information and it was run, there was no spousal support to be paid.
Oh.
So this person had got, I think, about how much energy he devoted mm-hmm. to saying he wasn't going to pay it mm-hmm. and getting worked up about it when it wasn't even an issue.
Right.
So I don't know where he'd gotten his information from about spousal support, but that's my message here, is don't go getting worked up about things that may not even apply to you.
Right, right. Well, that's a great story, and it certainly, we've all known people, and even I myself have certainly had different things go on in my life where I don't have the full picture, but I've made a whole story in my mind already, and I'm upset about a situation that doesn't even really exist. So
yes.
I think that's a great, if the moral of the story could be just stay present and stay with the facts and don't, as much as possible. It's difficult. I imagine one of the difficulties is, as you said, you don't judge how your divorce will go by how your friends went. And it's that thing where if you're going through a divorce, it's like having a baby. Everyone has something to say about how you should do it. Oh, I've been through. And this is what you should do. But like you said, there's no two divorces that are the same. So it becomes irrelevant then to take other people's advice in a way.
Right. I mean, I think it helps to, the more that you can hear and read about and understand, the more helpful it's going to be. But I think that you have to be really keep an open mind as to where there are differences in your situation from other people's. But I will say, in this first step about avoiding misinformation, while I say, like, don't dive into the legal process, I do think you should go get a legal consult and find out what the law is for where you live.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
And there's, even if you don't want to go to an attorney's office, I would check Amazon and ask for, you know, do-it-yourself divorce in Colorado, do-it-yourself divorce in New York, and you know, you might be able, you can throw some good handbooks on Amazon about how to do the divorce yourself. And I'm not saying that you're ready at that stage right now to make that decision as to whether or not you could do that, and that's a whole nother conversation. Mm-hmm. But if you get a book like that, it maybe costs you $15-$20, and you can read it, and you will start getting more informed about what the divorce process looks like for where you live. Okay. Every state has its own laws. So, you know, how spousal support is calculated in Colorado is completely different from, could be from all other states. And, you know, in Canada, I don't know what the laws are in Canada, whether there's differences by the provinces. But it's that, again, it's like, you know, you've talked to a friend who lives across the country from you, mm-hmm. and they tell you what they experienced. The law where you live may be completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect in Canada it is different from province to province, because there are, I'm in human resources as well for many years, and there's certainly different labor laws across the country, and different minimum wages, and all kinds of differences in basic working guidelines. So I'm sure there's differences in the legal process too regarding
spousal
support.
So while you're in that waiting period, the time, giving yourself time to adjust to this new reality, you can start educating yourself about what the legal process is for where you live.
Right. Okay. That sounds great. That, and Mandy, I think there are, I know in Canada, someone was just mentioning to me today that you can have 3 free consultations with a legal person at the courthouse. I don't know if you have anything like that in Colorado, but I imagine there are free services for people, even just to find out some first information, like the beginnings of.
Right. So that's going to vary tremendously depending on where you live. Where I live, and it's in the court district that I live, and they do have a forms clinic twice a month, where you could go and they can tell you what forms you need. Okay. I run a meetup locally for people to say, you know, I do it like every Monday, different topic each Monday, and that's all focused on the logistics and practicalities of working through divorce.
Okay.
A lot of attorneys will do a free initial consult, or they do one at a low cost.
Okay.
So, and you may find that if you live in a town where there's a law school, maybe they have a free clinic. So yeah, it's good at this stage to look for free resources.
Yes. Why not? So you had mentioned that you have some strategies that you recommend for taking the emotion out of the legal process. And so far you've talked about buying more time, as well as not letting misinformation and fear drive the decisions.
Right.
And avoiding making decisions when you don't have the right information. Are there any other things that you would suggest?
Right, so let me just talk a little bit more about making the decisions with the right information, because that's a little bit different than misinformation. Because what I've seen in that scenario mm-hmm. is that couples often dive into a discussion about, well, who's going to keep the house?
Mm-hmm.
How should we divide up the house? And they start talking about that, but what they haven't done is to gather the information about their complete financial picture. such as all of the credit card debt,
right,
and their retirement assets, and the relative values of the cars, because it, what you will need to come to is an agreement on how all of the financial assets are divided. But if you don't have that complete picture, if you start discussing the house and then find out in reality with the credit card debt, that needs to be refinanced or paid off, because if it's incurred while you were married, most credit card companies would regard it as a joint debt regardless of whose name it is.
Okay.
So it becomes tricky for just one party to take it. It's just there's some exposure there post-divorce. So if you look at the credit card debt, then you have to I've had a couple of situations where one party has been trying to think about the marital home, but when you bring in the marital debt, the most obvious answer is the marital home has to be sold. There is no way to buy out the other party and to take the share of the debt.
Wow. Even if that person has the financial means to do so?
Well, that's different if they have the financial means, but it means that, again, you've got to look at the whole picture. You can't have a conversation about the home without also addressing the debt.
Right.
And then looking at how much would somebody qualify. You know, you can, if you start having a conversation about buying out one spouse from the marital home, that other spouse has to have a conversation with the mortgage lender about qualifying, how much would they qualify for.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think people can get into deep into conversations about what's going to happen to certain assets when they haven't looked at the bigger picture. And then when they look at the bigger picture, they find out what they've been talking about isn't viable.
Right.
So I always tell people, and unfortunately here in Colorado, one of the very first things the legal process would have you do anyway is to create these sworn financial statements.
Okay.
And they are a complete pain to produce.
Okay.
everybody hates them. They're very overwhelming. And of course, most of the people I talk to don't like dealing with money to start with. So yeah. It's never somebody's, I hardly ever meet anybody who says, oh yes, okay, goody, I can do this. Nobody wants to do it. But if you work through the court forms, it helps you get ready for the legal process, but it also gives you all of the financial information you need to start to have that discussion about how are we going to divide things up.
So I can see how that would be helpful information, but I can also see that if you're still really strongly in the grieving process, that would be a difficult process to go through.
Right. And so if you've been successful in asking your spouse to give you more time, then you just hold off.
Yeah. And is there any particular length of time you would recommend? Or I imagine it's different from everyone, but I'm just curious.
It's very different. It's so different for everyone. I don't think that there is a magic number, because I've had people say, you know, that they're just going to hold off and they just need a little bit more time to process this. And then 3 weeks later, they call me and they want to set up a mediation.
And that would be fast.
And I got a call the other day from a lady who said, I spoke to you over a year ago. Mm-hmm. I think I'm finally ready to move ahead.
Mm-hmm. That sounds more, well, I was going to say more reasonable, but that's not fair either, because like you say, everyone's different and people process things different, and some people may put the emotions on hold so that they can finish the legal process. Who knows?
It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I could say there's a magic 4 months, 5 months or something, but it's not. It's very much about when you're ready. And of course it is dependent upon the other party being willing to wait.
Yes.
And again, I don't know about Canada, but in the US, all 50 states have no fault divorce laws, which pretty much means that if one party wants to get divorced, the divorce is going to happen.
Okay.
And then it's a question of the time it takes to work through the legal process. But so, you know, the other party may say, no, I'm not willing to wait any longer because I want to be divorced by XYZ or something. Okay. So then you're going to be pushed into the process maybe a little bit before you're ready. But for somebody who is, and maybe, you know, I've worked with people who have never handled the money. Mm-hmm. And so for them to fill out the sworn financial statements on their own, it's often overwhelming for them. But that's something that I can, as a divorce coach, I can assist them with and help them gather the information and to start pulling together. We're required to list out all the expenses, almost create a budget. And I say, yeah, it's a complete pain. But it means that what you have then is a starting point for looking at what will be the impact of divorce on your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that would be my fourth strategy, is to be open to getting professional help mm-hmm. that you need. So, and that might mean certainly getting a legal consult on what the legal process is in your area. It may mean getting psychological help if there's been infidelity and there's a lot of concern about rejection. Mm-hmm. If you are struggling with depression, mm-hmm. anxiety, that would point to more psychiatric help and assistance, so that you can get those aspects under control before you get pushed into the legal process.
Yes.
Certainly divorce coaches, were more common now than we were 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But what I tell people is this, it's your first time through divorce. You have no idea how to manage it. It's a huge mammoth project. It's a bit like moving cross country.
Okay.
A huge relocation, because it impacts every aspect of your life. You've never managed that before, but a divorce coach has helped many people through that. Mm-hmm. So while every divorce is different, there is a process that people can follow to help make it easier. And that's the value that a divorce coach can bring in and just help you stay, okay, well, figure out what is the right timing of this?
Yes.
What is the next step I should make?
Yes. Well, these are all really, really useful pieces of information. Are there any other pieces that you feel like you haven't touched on with regards to? I know there's a million things.
I know, and I think getting divorced is probably one of the hardest things most people ever do. Mm-hmm. And it isn't easy. But I've met many people who tell me that they are a stronger person afterwards.
Yes.
That they, a lot of people that say that they're a better parent afterwards.
Okay.
And that they've learned and grown from what happened.
Yes. Yes.
Not many people have told me that they've wished they'd stayed married.
Okay. Interesting, so, isn't it?
Yes.
And do you find it's true that it's usually women that make the decision to leave? Because I've heard a statistic on that.
I know, and I think I wrote a blog post quite some time ago. This is like, I hate statistics.
Yeah, I know.
Because I look at that and I say, you know, I know that there's a proposition that in mid-age divorce, it's more often the woman that files. Mm-hmm. And that may be true, but that doesn't mean to say that that's her choice. right. or her decision. Or maybe it is the decision, but maybe it's, you know, I always say, you know, the choice doesn't mean that it was wanted, mm-hmm. but it may mean that the person believes that that is the only option that's open to them now, mm-hmm. and that they need to follow to go ahead and protect themselves.
Right.
So I don't like that, the statistic. I think that it's a lot more complex than saying, just looking at who initiated the filing and saying more women file for divorce than men. I think it's a lot more complicated than that.
Fair enough. That makes a lot of sense to me. And as you know, the other thing that came to mind was, it seems to trivialize it, doesn't it? And it seems to, as you just alluded to, insinuate that a woman wants to have the divorce, or the man, whoever initiates it, wants the divorce. But you're right, it's usually the last choice. It's usually after everything else is exhausted, and I mean, no one gets married thinking they're going to divorce.
Right.
So for most people, it's the very, very, very last straw kind of thing.
And right.
They just can't live anymore within that situation that feels unbearable for whatever reason.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Mandy. It's been a pleasure talking to you today, and I hope we get to do this again.
It's been a pleasure too. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
My pleasure. Until next time.